Some days call for some oomph to amplify your everyday look, like when you want the look of false lashes without the extra effort. Reach for Thrive Cosmetics Liquid Lash Volumizer Mascara. Or when you want all eyes on your smile, keep Empower Gloss Ultra Glossy Lip Serum in your bag. It's a burst of 24-hour hydration that smooths like a serum, shines like a gloss, and can be worn sheer or layered. You'll also look and feel your best with Thrive Cosmetics. Plus, every product is 100% vegan, cruelty-free, and made with clean, skin-loving ingredients that work with your skin, not against it. And for every product purchased, Thrive Cosmetics donates to help communities thrive. So every time you use your favorite Thrive Cosmetics product, you're helping communities you care about too. Amplify your everyday. Go to thrivecosmetics.com/shine26 for an exclusive offer of 20% off your first order. That's Thrive Cosmetics, CAUSEMETICS.com/shine26.
It was heartfelt and sincere.
It was idiotic.
Hello, everybody. This is Again With This, Dawson's Creek. Today's episode is Season 6, Episode 2, The Song Remains the Same. And now your hosts, which are coming at you right now.
Tara Aranio and Sarah D. Bunting.
Excuse me, was that now your hosts?
Yeah.
Okay, great. Yeah. Hi, Sarah.
Very, very Shanto pronunciation. Brenda Wash. Hi, Tara. Hi, Dave.
Hello, listeners. Before we get into this episode, we want to tell you what's going on over in the club, which, as we let you know at the top of the month, it's never been more important for you to be in the club. Major decisions are getting made about programming, and you can be part of them. Again, with this podcast.com/club. But there isn't only work for you to do in terms of telling us what you want us to do. There's also bonus episodes, and we are doing all Pride topics this Pride month. And keeping up with that theme, this Friday, June 12th, we're going to be watching Gina Gershon in the Spelling Films production, Bound, from 1996. This is on Canopy with K. We'll link in the show notes. If you don't have Canopy, you probably do, because if you have a library card, you probably have access to it. And if you don't have a library card, go get a library card. We tried to pick choices this month that were going to highlight queer joy. And even though lots of people die very violently in Bound, I would say it still fits the brief.
It is quite joyous.
Mm-hmm. And you know what else fits the briefs? Gina Gershon, am I right?
Oh.
So we'll be talking about that and more. Once again, that URL is again with this podcast.com/club. All right. Are you ready, Sarah, to talk about The Song Remains the Same?
I mean, I guess. There's a lot of dumb bullshit, and I feel like we're not on the same side of some dumb bullshit arguments, but I guess we're going to find out.
I guess we will. Let's start with our C-plot, though. Please welcome Jen's newest love interest. We open on the Boston Bay College campus-ish. There's a campus in the front and Boston in the back, and I don't think they are the same shot at all. They're composited together. You can see this in the visual aids. Jen is splitting up the textbooks that she and Grams just bought. Jen thinks the math book was included by mistake when Grams says she's actually taking a math class to understand Mr. Smalls' work. Again, you're not going to see him again. Apparently, we're going to hear about him a lot, though. Jen lectures Grams about the slippery slope of women's heterosexist self-abnegation and the fraud of monogamy, being so tiresome about it that Grams' attention is drawn to the guy behind Jen, who is wearing a turquoise choker and openly watching Jen. And clip two.
I mean, haven't we come further as a sex? What?
Hi.
Hi, I'm sorry. Are we bothering you? Because perhaps if it's not too much trouble, you could just get your own conversation.
No, sorry. It's just I've been sitting here trying to figure out where I've met you before, and suddenly I realized I've never met you before.
Great. Well, I'm really glad that we got that figured out.
I've heard you on the radio.
Oh, she was on the radio.
Oh, you were?
She was very good, too.
Okay, you got me unbusted. I was on the radio, but I'm not anymore, so thank you very much for listening, and bye-bye.
So did you get fired, or what?
What is this, an interview?
Just curious.
Well, let's just say that I had some artistic differences with the new management.
Fine, then we'll just say that.
Fine.
Excuse me, young man. Would you care to join us?
I don't know what the artistic differences were. That was all off screen. I don't know if that's in the lost episode that we never got to see or whatever happened with the premiere. That seemed like it was chopped and screwed, but whatever.
Yeah.
No one felt like writing radio storylines anymore, I guess, which is
I guess.
Fine.
That was just a contrivance to include Charlie, and now that he's gone, so was that.
Sure.
Fine with me.
And if this guy, whose name is CJ, although I don't think we learned that in this episode, I only know that from IMDb, if he sounds familiar, it is because he is played by Jensen Ackles, pre-Dean and Supernatural. That is going to be a few years after this, and he looks like a baby.
Oh, my God. Fetal.
The skin, so unlined.
Terrible hair, terrible accessorizing, still so hot.
He's very attractive, yes. When we rejoin Jen, Grams has peeled off and left Jen and her split ends, less handsome, to flirt with CJ about how nice it is that Jen lives with Grams. Jen says that's what everyone says. How do they know she doesn't beat Grams with a stick and leave her tied to a radiator all winter? Which, if that were going anyway, I think it would be the opposite. Grams beating her with a stick. CJ asks if this is a cry for help. Jen asks if she looks like she needs it. And CJ says she seems like someone who could give it. And I guess the episode was short because there's almost a whole minute of wheel spinning about Jen mistaking these overtures for religious testimony and only committing to perch on the side of her chair while he tells her what he means, which is he's trying to recruit her to volunteer at a peer counseling program called The Stand. Which, you know, does sound kind of religious-y, I have to say, but...
Yeah, culty, for
sure. If he's going to be at the information session tonight, Jen will go. When we see her next, she's in the doorway at the meeting, being put off by posters of clowns reminding volunteers to break for laughter. See this in the visual aids as well. Listening to the leader's pitch, they mostly just do referrals and usually reminding a caller to breathe gets the job done. Also, clip three.
Tomorrow will be another day for you, too. Which brings me to our number one rule around here. Never be afraid to ask for a hug at the end of a tough day.
You know.
Hey, Nexium. Take it easy. Let's play some volleyball in the middle of the night. Bye.
I don't think this does turn out to be a cult. I think these are just very corny, you know, undergrads.
Yeah.
And I did appreciate that, like, anytime you try to join a volunteer organization with people that are doing things that are worthwhile, there is a certain level of corniness that you're going to encounter, and you just have to be ready for that and understand that that doesn't mean you should necessarily leave Jen. But she does. She is spotted on the sidewalk by CJ. She tries to tell him that it's not really her scene. Clip four.
Look, I don't want to knock your system. I'm sure that it's a really good system, but...
It's just not cool enough for you. That's fine.
No, I didn't say that. I mean, honestly, I think it's really nice that you have something that you believe in like that.
You said it like it's a bad thing.
No, it's just that I'm not much of a joiner. It was really nice to meet you. And good luck. And bye.
So then why did you come?
That's not obvious.
For argument's sake, let's say it's not.
I made myself this promise over the summer.
What was that?
That no matter what, I would really do things differently this year, like try to make new friends and stuff. And I can't do that by pretending to be somebody that I'm not, because then those friends that I make would think that I'm something that I'm not.
And what aren't you?
Well, for starters, I'm not as great as a person as you think I am.
Well, that's too bad. It was nice to meet you. And no matter what happens this year, I hope you do one thing.
What's that?
Change your mind about yourself.
Does it feel like something got left on the cutting room floor in terms of, like, what exactly is putting her off? Like, this is, like, straight edge, this group?
Yeah.
Jesus-y on the down low. Like, I don't get what the objection is. I feel like something got cut out.
I did think that it was what he said, that he's like, oh, it's not cool enough for you. But I just thought it was that she's like, these people are dorks. I don't want to hang out with them. I don't want to hug them. This is not what I had in mind. And if he's not trying to fuck me, I'm not interested.
Yeah, true.
He asked why she went. Isn't it obvious? It's obvious to me. She was looking to hook up.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Considering she is wearing a purse shaped like a puppy, she should maybe not be judging the coolness of anyone else. But his whole, you know, change your mind about yourself does feel, again, sort of missionary.
Mm-hmm.
So I guess we'll see if there's more of that to come.
Not like the position, am I right?
No, not like the position. Onward in our B plot. Pacey enters a new industry and a new home. Audrey wakes up in the hotel room that we heard in the last episode she was going to get. I guess we're supposed to be able to tell it's fancy because the decor looks like it has not been updated since about 1959.
Like, yeah.
Including the phone.
Oh, Jesus. Yeah, that Joan Collins boudoir decor.
Yeah.
Hey.
Mm-hmm. So Audrey's trying to order room service when Pacey comes out of the bathroom dressed, forbidding her from doing so given his interview and the class that she has to get to in an hour. Audrey helps Pacey tie his tie around his unironed button down. He says he has only ever worn a tie once before, and I will trust this episode's writer, Gina Fattori, because that is not fact-checking I care to do. They reset his storyline with regard to the finance job that Audrey's dad has lined up for Pacey. And after Audrey has wished Pacey luck on his way out, she defiantly orders breakfast anyway, which is the correct call. And when we see Pacey next, he's in a conference room full of guys around his age getting the Little Archie version of the Alec Baldwin, Glengarry, Glenn Ross speech from a character we're about to learn is named Rich Rinaldi. He is played by Dana Ashbrook, Dawson's Creek's third Twin Peaks alumnus. He played Bobby. Essentially, Rich says if they are not ready to cold call potential clients, they should leave immediately, which no one does. They're also going to be studying for their Series 7 stockbroker exam, and if they fail on their first try, they'll be out of the training program. Pacey dares to ask, given that the stock market is fucked at the moment, why anyone would want this job, and Rich pivots to a lecture about hope, the surge of adrenaline you get right before you check winning lottery numbers. That is supposedly what stockbrokers sell, according to Rich, and apparently this is an opt-out situation for anyone in the room who doesn't show up on Monday morning. Pacey hangs back so he can give Rich his name, and clip five.
Mr. Rinaldi, I don't need till Monday morning. I'm in right now.
Forward to working with you, Pacey.
Okay.
Oh, and you might want to rethink that suit. Seems a little gay.
I guess because it fits. I don't know what else is gay about it.
Yeah. Why even give him that line anyway?
Well, I assume it's setting up some future conflict that Pacey will have to righteously quit over. Just a guess.
Yeah. Sigh.
Later, Pacey has tucked his tie into his dress shirt to make spaghetti at Graham's house and hassle Audrey about skipping class again. She whines that she had to shop, and then there's a beat where Audrey tells Pacey too late not to sauce her spaghetti, and she hands that plate off to Jack as he enters. She ends up eating plain pasta later in the scene perfectly happily, and if there's any part of this meal that a girl who grew up rich in Los Angeles wouldn't eat, it's the part with gluten, I feel.
She also does seem like that grown-up child who still like butter noodles.
Maybe.
And dinosaur-shaped chicken fingers.
Perhaps. Never mind any of that. Jack has been touring apartments in his and Pacey's price range, and they are all too filthy. Pacey thinks they should reconsider the one he saw yesterday, which was immaculate. Clip six.
Jack, I'm scandalized. Is that an obviously gay trait that you've just revealed to us?
Hey, I'm clean, all right? Sue me. Try living with someone's grandmother for a few years. The solution here is really obvious. We gotta go back. We gotta try again. We have to convince this woman of why it is she wants to live with the two of us.
If she doesn't want to live with guys, she doesn't want to live with guys. Who can blame her? Who wants to deal with all those little shaving hairs in the sink when you're trying to brush your teeth in the morning?
Real! Too real.
Yeah. Seriously. Just had this conversation this morning.
Yeah.
Rinse. Thank you.
Just wet a washcloth, swipe them up, takes 2 seconds. The reason I know is because I do it all the time.
Yeah, you and I do it.
Mm-hmm.
Thanks.
Pacey reminds Audrey that while he is messy, Jack is neat. Audrey says Pacey's beyond guy and to the slob level of guy's guy. But Pacey says that was yesterday. Today, he's a guy with a job, and he will explain the specifics later. Right now, they have an apartment to get, which means dialing Emma's number, ordering Audrey to swallow the food in her mouth, and to then get on the phone to set up an appointment to see the apartment as though Audrey is the one who wants it. And when the three of them roll up to the apartment, Jack and Audrey are immediately impressed. Emma comes down and is alarmed to see Audrey there because Emma remembers her from the bar and correctly assumes Audrey is not actually there to rent the place for herself. Pacey tries to start running his sales pitch on Emma, but then Debbie and Donna, the lesbians, are on the spiral staircase saying they will take it, and Emma tells Pacey he's too late. Yet when we come back to the apartment, everyone is still there. Jack is talking to Donna and Debbie as Pacey pulls Emma aside and mutters that lesbians notoriously commit too fast. Soon they're going to break up and throw her appliances at each other. Emma asks how Pacey knows Emma's not going to be throwing her appliances at him, and also how he knows she's not a lesbian. Pacey admits that's a good point, but clip 7.
When you stop and think about this, you're going to realize that the benefits to living with the two of us far outweigh the disadvantages. Let's just think about it for one second, shall we? How is it that two schlubs like us can afford to live in a place like this? Because the neighborhood is not that great, am I right? I am, right? So you got to give me that one, right? Living with two guys, it's like having free security. Secondly, I am a fantastic cook, and I will cook you anything, anytime, anywhere. But the pièce de résistance, and we discussed this last night, I am a thoroughly monogamous, domesticated, American male with a girlfriend. A steady girlfriend.
Yeah, it's true, you know, about the cooking. Although, we'll probably actually be breaking up soon, and then God knows what string of hoes he'll have running through this joint, and he's really noisy, too, especially when he's having...
Honey.
Darling.
Sweetheart.
Yes.
Sidebar.
Sure.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm starting to get what people were telling us about Audrey, the... chiseling away at what we liked about her from season 5 is really proceeding quickly.
Mm-hmm.
There's a brief cut over to Jack, making sure Emma told Debbie and Donna about the mouse problem, and then back to Pacey and Audrey, clip 8.
I didn't like this situation last night, and now that I see you bantering back and forth with that girl, I like it even less.
That girl? That girl hates me.
I know. She hates you too much. I don't trust it.
Sure, no problem.
Thank you very much. Let's go. Hey, no, hello, wait, please stop. Where are you going? Hello, hi, wait.
What did you say?
Oh, my love for this apartment knows no ethical boundaries.
God, this is so much less interesting than the show thinks or is trying to underscore.
Yeah.
With the cues, Audrey does make a good point, though, honestly.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Like, he and Joey hated each other.
They are definitely flirting very hard. Like, I see what she's talking about. But I also don't think that getting an apartment was necessarily a storyline that needed to span 2 episodes, particularly.
No.
It's also shameful that Jack would have so little solidarity with his queer sisters, but I also don't know why they would believe him about the mice since they know he is trying to get the place as well. I just assume that he's lying. Girls, come on.
Yeah, get a grip.
At Hell's Kitchen later, Emma has just delivered 4 ridiculously expensive soft drinks when Jack follows her to the bar. He has barely started apologizing for chasing off Donna and Debbie when Emma sighs that he and Pacey can have the place. Pacey was right about the safety of the neighborhood. She just didn't want to give him the satisfaction. So Jack puts on a fake downcast face before dropping the key and telling Pacey they can move in that weekend because Pacey somehow did not hear a conversation that took place roughly 2 yards behind him. Jen is not that psyched about toasting Jack, leaving her alone at Graham's place, nor does Audrey want to celebrate the likely death knell for her and Pacey's relationship. So Jack just toasts to friendship. And that's where we leave them. And then we have to get on to the A plot. Having gotten some off Dawson, Joey may also get a job. We open on all the discarded clothes on Joey's dorm room floor. The music supervisor attacks me personally by playing that Sophie B. Hawkins song I hate again. And then Katie Holmes annoys me by portraying Joey waking up in bed with Dawson looking quietly blissful, unlike the anxious mess she was waking up with Pacey after their first time. I did not forget.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, we have to watch Dawson and Joey doing more chemistry-free kissing as the camera decorously slides over to the snow globe. And when we return to Joey, she's smiling alone next to a note on her pillow. So I guess we're supposed to think that round two we just saw was a dream, right?
Oh, I assumed it was real.
Maybe. The note reads, "Went out for breakfast," all lowercase. And moments later, Dawson opens the door with just coffee, which is not breakfast. He hands Joey a waffle robe, the same shade of baby pink as the single rose he has brought her from one of Worthington's many bushes. I think they should have established that Dawson regularly carries a knife, because you can't just pick a rose like that.
Those stems are really thick as hell. Mm-hmm.
Joey says there's a $500 fine attached, and Dawson says it's worth every penny. Of course, this is where Joey starts to say they should probably discuss what they did and what it means, but Dawson just leans in for a kiss, saying maybe later, and Joey lets him shut her up. And when we see Dawson again, he's packing up his shit, then shaking the snow globe as Joey comes out of the can and meaningfully says, "Hi." He says she looks beautiful. She looks regular. Dawson has to work, but he was hoping they could meet later. He says he'll call her and then clarifies he doesn't mean that in the frat boy trying to make a graceful exit from an awkward hookup way. Joey guesses since last night words have lost all meaning because she spent 15 minutes in the bathroom thinking about what to say and came up with hi. Dawson took an hour writing 3 failed drafts of his morning note before it went out for breakfast. And then his phone rings. It is Todd, furious that Dawson is not wherever he is. Dawson promises he's on his way and then returns to wasting time. Joey needs to know where the other 3 drafts are. He tossed them in a dumpster, he says. Todd, who is in Dawson's phone as Satan, interrupts further schmooping by calling back to order a triple espresso and an Italian pastry. Joey tells Dawson to go. Clip 9.
You know, before I leave, I just want to make absolutely certain
Dawson.
That...
This is a bumper crop of mouth noises, if that's what you're into this episode.
Yeah. He is actually pretty charming in this section of the episode, I feel. Mm-hmm. Or more charming than he usually is.
Yes.
But that could also be down to her just being increasingly annoying and not protagonist.
Mm-hmm.
But still, always shut up, Dawson.
Always shut up, Dawson. I mean, he's more confident than she is because he's slept with one more person than she has, I guess. He steps out and then they stand on either side of the door being happy. I am not, but good for them, I guess. After the commercials, we see that Dawson wasted even more time changing his shirt before getting Todd's coffee and no pastry and meeting him in a parking garage that Todd misidentifies as an alley before asking if Dawson would murder someone there. Dawson would murder Todd if he changes a location that 18 people have signed off on. There is some banter about Dawson's time management and that Dawson's been bringing Todd decaf all summer before clip 10.
You weren't in your room either.
No. I spent the night at a friend's.
A friend's? Had I known you actually had any friends, I wouldn't have wasted valuable production dollars on lodging you. Well, details?
Not a chance. Every good thing that's happened in my life, I've essentially managed to talk out of existence. I'm not going to do that this time.
Well, give you points for self-awareness, because that is what you are like.
Yes, sorry, buddy.
However,
effort noted.
I refuse to believe that a narcissist like Todd gives one shit about Dawson's or any other person's personal life.
Yeah, he might ask for details and then when they're not forthcoming, be like, okay, but enough about you. Mm-hmm. Why weren't you here?
Yes.
Okay, I don't care anymore.
Yep. Over to Joey, returning to Hell's Kitchen as the music supervisor redeems themselves with Anna Waronker's I Wish You Well on the jukebox. I guess Joey also likes it because she's gazing at said jukebox with a dreamy smile when Eddie from Lit Class comes up behind her and bumps her with his shoulder. This is what happens then, clip 11.
Excuse me?
Yeah.
You obviously don't remember me, but...
No, yeah, sure. Nice to see you again.
Excuse me.
Sorry, I don't really have time to chit-chat.
I'm not attempting to forge some kind of social connection here.
Well, good, because...
You can just apologize and we'll move on.
Apologize?
Yeah.
Look, it's really simple. You read the book, you come to class, preferably in that order.
Finished?
Yes.
Good. You bumped into me just now on your mad dash to read the lunch specials.
Well, I'm sorry.
Thank you.
Didn't realize you were so delicate.
Oh my God. How short was this fucking episode?
Honestly. And I know this is also setting him up as a future love interest, probably, but this is still quite a stink for her to make, considering how apologetic she wasn't when she knocked Professor Hetson fully on his ass in the last episode, which was yesterday. Yeah. Anyway, Emma remembers Joey and guesses she has returned for the server job. Joey admits she's not super psyched about the part of the job where she gets her butt grabbed by drunks all the time, but she is trusting her instincts for a change. Emma will put in a good word for her with the manager, and she gives Joey an application. As Joey's filling it out, she asks if Eddie eats lunch there often, and Emma says no, but he does work there as a bartender. Uh-oh.
Wah, wah.
Then Joey's alone, wandering around the back of a warehouse. She calls Dawson and says she thinks she took a wrong turn, whereupon he opens the door behind her because this warehouse is a soundstage. And then we have to see Dawson leading Joey by the hand around it where they're, you know, all the sets of Todd's movie. It's a 70s period piece about a group of teenagers who are obsessed by the Boston Strangler who spend a weekend together in an old house on Cape Cod, scaring the crap out of each other. Sarah, would you go opening weekend?
No, probably not. I actually had to step myself through this while the episode was on pause, but like the Boston Strangler was sort of like late 60s to late 60s and whatever. Anyway, it doesn't really matter. I guess the case was more of a like turn of the 70s thing, but it doesn't mean kids couldn't be obsessed with it. But then like Cape Cod had its own crimes happening. Why wouldn't they be obsessed with the Lady in the Dunes instead? It's an actual Cape case. Why isn't your show just in fucking North Carolina?
Yeah.
Don't bring true crimes into this. I am offended and I will not forget.
I mean, I assume the reason it's the Boston Strangler is that's one people have heard of. I've never heard of the Lady in the Dunes.
No reason you should.
Yes. Dawson is proud of all the input he had on the look of the set. Luckily for him, Todd doesn't trust his production designer and Todd doesn't know what a typical American house looks like, which is when we see the Dawson Creek production has saved money by having Dawson supposedly tell Todd to design the movie house to look exactly like his parents' house in Capeside, I think down to the paint color, which Joey spins around in, looking completely astonished. And, you know, I guess the episode was really short because when we come back from commercials, Joey is going on and on and on about how incredible this all is and that it's like it's Dawson's movie. He kind of wistfully says it's not. He's just the director's assistant. Like, yeah, no duh. You're 19. Who do you think you are? Kane Parsons, director of Backrooms? You're not. Joey can't believe this is real. Dawson says it's as real as something can be that's entirely an illusion. Joey looks up at what is in the real house, Dawson's bedroom door, and he takes her up there so that she can see there is no room. He says it's because they ran out of money, but as we know, and as Amy Sugarman of 90210 OMG somehow still refuses to understand, if there were going to be a room off that door in the film, it would be built at ground level. They don't like build a two-story functional house.
Yeah.
It's like, stairs that go to nowhere.
Also, we all saw noises off, and we, some of us may have wanted to just watch that again instead of this.
Dawson has walked Joey out to a safety railing, and they're nuzzling cheeks when Todd materializes, yelling at Dawson, then sees them and comments that Leary's got a bird. Todd is English. They've been really subtle about that so far, but just in case you didn't clock it, he is.
Talk about a period piece. Holy shit.
Honestly. Back on the floor, Dawson makes introductions. Todd pretends never to have heard of Worthington and then changes the subject back to his movie and himself. Joey calls the set amazing. They'll be back to shoot in 2 weeks. Todd winks as he says he hopes Joey will come back and see them then. Joey claps Dawson on the shoulder in a weirdly chummy way, saying she hopes so too. Like, Todd already saw you being coupley. It's fine. He knows what the deal is. Like, if he's hitting on you, it's just a reflex.
Yeah. He's self-absorbed, not an idiot.
Yeah. Todd is eyeing Joey down when Dawson finally hustles him away. Todd surmises that he's getting the bum's rush so Dawson can frolic with his bird. And once he's confirmed that Dawson has made all the arrangements to get them to the airport the next morning, he winks again, tells Dawson to go get him, Tiger. And sometime later, Joey's still wandering around the set in total wonderment when Dawson finds her and says he wants to take her out for her birthday officially, as long as she has no other plans. And she reminds us all that no one else remembered her birthday, so of course she is free. She wants to change clothes first, but it turns out Dawson's just taking her to the fake porch, which he has drowned in fairy lights. Again, really underscoring what they have between them is ultimately juvenile. He's taking her to a replica of his childhood home where they slept in the same bed as sexless children. He's not growing. But it works on her. He sits her at a cafe table and pours champagne from a $200 gift basket sent to Todd from the post-processing house in which Dawson is confident Todd won't miss. And then he toasts Clip 12.
To Joey Potter. On her 19th birthday. Then it will live in infamy.
For me, it will. I don't think that's what you meant, though.
No. Oh, my God.
Yeah.
We have nothing to fear but fear itself. Like, what? Where are you going with this?
Joey says it's a great day. Dawson says it hasn't ended yet. They very slowly lean toward each other and take a clock-eatingly long time holding their lips against one another's.
Oh, my God. While cutting off all blood flow to the lower halves of their bodies.
Yes.
It just is so awkward.
Yes. Their butts are like in separate counties as they're kissing. Dawson is then walking Joey back to her dorm room, I hope, after taking her back to his hotel to fool around off screen. He reminds her that time is their enemy. He is returning to L.A. tomorrow, but after that, he'll be back in Boston. Clip 13.
Back to what exactly?
It's us.
Ugh, God.
Well, yeah, yuck, but like, good, finally.
Sure.
Fucking declare it. Like, let's go.
Yes. If you're going to do this, I guess do it. Be clear, unlike before, yeah. But I still don't
we
like it.
We could have been done with this a season and a half ago, probably, but let's, all right. Like, at least people are declaring themselves. Let's see how it goes. Spoiler. Great.
This cues kissing, during which Dawson's phone rings. Joey tells him he should answer it because he loves his job, so he checks it and says it's not Todd. Joey doesn't believe him, especially not when it rings again. Clip 14.
Hey, Joey. What are you
doing? Who's the girl?
Joey.
Who's the girl calling your cell phone?
It's not fair.
No, tell me, who is it?
Nobody.
Nobody. That's interesting because
she's a friend. She's some friend from LA.
Well, first she's nobody. Now she's a friend. Which is it, Dawson?
She's just a girl. She's a girl I've been kind of seeing.
Hi. Are you guys gonna stand out here all night? Because we're trying, not very successfully, mind you, to throw you a surprise party.
Hey, surprise!
Happy birthday! You hate it, don't you?
No. Lucky me.
Oh, God.
I'm like, this is the point at which, and you could sort of see this in the visual aids, at which if I were anyone else in the scene, I would throw myself on the ground and just marine crawl into the hallway.
Yeah.
Like, get me out of here, whatever it takes.
Mm-hmm.
Those old doors are not that soundproof.
No.
They fully know.
No, they do. I'm also going to say, don't throw a bunch of Mylar confetti when there's an uncovered cake in the vicinity, because
yeah.
It's going to get everywhere and people are going to swallow that and it's not good for you.
No, or they're going to be lit on fire by the candles that were already going. Great
yes.
work, everyone.
Also, just don't throw confetti. It's like, it's going to be there forever now. It's impossible
yeah.
to pick it all up.
Mm-hmm.
Rude.
It's true.
After commercials, Joey's opening Audrey's gift as Audrey babbles that it's from Fred Siegel, so Joey can't return it, but then why would she? It's stunning. Joey says it's just what she wanted, but her poker face is so terrible, Jen asks her what's wrong. Joey lies that nothing is and then drags Dawson into the bathroom and clip 15.
You have a girlfriend? I slept with you last night and you have a girlfriend?
This is a very unhappy birthday.
I didn't say that. I said I'd been seeing someone.
Seeing someone? What the hell does that mean, Dawson?
I don't know. But the point is, Joey, I broke up with her the second something happened
How?
Between us.
How? In your mind?
The first thing this morning. What do you think I want when I left?
I thought you went out for breakfast. I didn't know you were getting up early to go break up with someone else.
Well, would you rather I didn't?
No. I would rather you weren't involved with someone when we finally sleep together.
Joey, I'm sorry if this ruins the fantasy, but this girl means nothing to me compared to you.
You should have told me.
When? Where?
Before.
Joey, stop.
Why? Why stop now? Everyone here who thinks Dawson should have told me he had a girlfriend before he decided to sleep with me, raise your hand.
I mean, sure. Again, yes. Yeah. Like, just get it out. Don't do that TV thing where it's like, we can't hear screaming that is happening very close by and that we would obviously be trying to store up for car talk. So everyone's wrong.
Well, Jen and Audrey raise their hands and it's funny at least.
Yeah.
Dawson unwisely says that Joey's blowing this all out of proportion. Jack says maybe they should take a breather, but Pacey says the rest of them could actually just leave, which they hasten to do. Audrey refuses until Joey says it's okay, which she does. And then, clip 16.
Happy birthday, Joe. I think I'm going to rip each other's heads off.
Let's just go.
I put the captions on for that. That's Jack muttering, they are going to rip each other's heads off, which kind of.
Yeah.
So when they're alone again, clip 17.
We didn't talk at all this summer, which was your choice as much as it was mine.
So I asked you to lie to me?
Joey, you and I both know if either one of us had stopped and thought for even a second last night, then what we did never would have happened. And I, for one, I'm not sorry that it did. If you are, then that's a completely separate argument. That's actually a much bigger deal.
Dawson, you have a girlfriend. How is that not a big deal?
Had a girlfriend, Joey. Look, I'm willing to admit that the timing on this is far from perfect, but I'm sick of waiting for this so-called perfect timing. It's obviously never going to happen for us.
You're right. You know, it's better to just get it over with and move on. You know, slept with Joey. Just cross that off my list of things to do.
You know that's not how I think.
How do I know that, Dawson? I haven't talked to you all summer. Apparently, you've changed so much that you're
you
willing
really
to...
You really think I'd want to sleep with you and not want it to mean more, Joe? You think I've been waiting all these years for us to have one night together and then go our separate ways?
Oh, I'm sorry you got sick of waiting, Dawson. I'm sorry that I wanted our first time to mean something more than just...
It does mean more. Joey, it means everything to me. I don't know what it means to you.
Okay, this fight goes on, and I've cut it into a bunch of different clips. I have to stop here because... I'm with him to a point, but he certainly had time when they were catching up at the bar to say, I have been seeing someone. So to me, the fact that he didn't means he had a plan with regard to Joey and sleeping with her, and that if it hadn't worked, he would have just returned to this other girl, which makes him kind of an LA player phony, in my opinion.
Kind of, yeah. Or it's just like the LA thing is one thing, but he's back here and Joey is, you know... Queen Joey.
Right.
Maybe it's just the delivery, like he should have mentioned it. But on the other hand, they should have talked to each other over the summer and her finding out that he'd been seeing someone, which is like kind of a broad range of possible involvement.
Yes.
This way is extremely contrived and only on TV. So like I'll grade on a curve for that as far as her reaction. But it's like, I don't know, you couldn't have sent him an email. Like we said this in previous episodes, there's no reason for you to be out of communication in the early aughts. It's not that difficult. Mostly, though, I'm siding with him here because this is like literally the first time that the writing, it's weird, like the writing and the portrayal line up to actually make him the protagonist of the show. I don't know exactly what, and I don't think we're supposed to get that from it. I think we're supposed to side with Joey somehow, but the show has made her impossible to really like.
Yeah.
I mean, or she's just boring at best, and he is actually sort of like, that's bluttery delivery actually felt very genuine for once. I don't know. Vanderbeek is fucking selling it somehow.
Yeah.
Probably on the wrong side of history there. And we do know how this ultimately turns out. It's six, but it's like, I kind of felt that they don't have any chemistry. This doesn't need to go on. I'm not saying they should have ended up together for longer. It's just like this particular scene, it's very ironic that in this moment, finally, it's like, you know what? I'm fucking on the side of the guy in the title.
Yeah. I'll also say this, based on how she played her reaction in the previous episode when he started like turning the hug into a hug plus, as it were, that she seemed more hesitant and more like, I guess, you know? And so now I feel like some of what she's doing, like the way that she's all over the place, and I'm not sure if we're supposed to read it this way, is like her looking for any reason to pull the ripcord and be like, I'm out, you know?
Yeah, that could be. Or like it was terrible, or like the dog caught the car and now she doesn't know what to do. Yeah. Like that could be on the other side of it. He knows what to do. He's like, I did that. Like, all right, is it all corny and he's stuck in the past? Yes, but he sees the lane and he's driving the lane and she's just all over the place. So
yeah, yeah. It also, like, she had already gotten past this point in the previous season. Like, after Mitch's death, she had the whole thing with Audrey where she was like, Dawson didn't want to talk to me and I was relieved. Where it's like,
yeah,
she's trying to do a different thing with her life. And then she sort of backslid and now is like, oh, fuck, oh, fuck. Like, I don't, this isn't what I want.
Yeah.
So I'm going to pick a fight over something. Like, I'm not, I don't think he did anything so wrong, really. You know, I was seeing someone and then we had sex and I immediately broke up with her. Like, that's not great to the other girl, but we don't know who that is. And we also don't know, like you said, how serious it was either.
Right. She could have, without realizing it, like you said, just been looking for way out of it. Mm-hmm. Like, she seems to be getting increasingly angry about him not telling her about it. And, but there is also that tone of relief a little bit. So,
yeah, there's so much more of this fight. Let's return to it. Clip 18.
Oh, you're saying that I wanted this to happen?
No, because that would involve you actually knowing what you want, which we both know is not likely to happen anytime this decade.
Oh, great. You know, use something I said when I was a child.
You're still a child, Joey. You're still the same scared little girl who.
Who what? What, Dawson? I broke your heart? God, is the statute of limitations ever gonna end on that one? Ever? Dawson, I'm sorry I don't have the same dreams I had when I was 15 years old, and I'm sorry that I moved on faster than you did, but you know what? Maybe not everything that happens to you is my fault. And maybe just because I want more from my life than—
More than what? More than us? You don't know, do you? You've never known. The entire time I've known you, all you've wanted to do is escape. For me, from Capeside, you say that I'm the dreamer. I'm the one who doesn't want to live in the real world. Well, I'm doing it, Joey. Right now, I'm living in the real world. It's you who wants the fantasy.
I want the fantasy.
Yes.
Who lit the candles? Who bought the champagne?
I mean, I think the champagne was free, but But, like, they're kind of both children. Like, I hear what he's saying, and I hear what you're saying, too. But, like, particulars of the seduction scene at the soundstage kind of just underscores that, that they're both sort of stuck at an arrested development phase.
Sure. Although a lot of her accusations sound like confessions to me, so. Mm-hmm.
There's also this, clip 19.
Who dumped who 4 years ago?
Okay. I have to laugh at the idea that the deeper cut for him was 4 years ago when Joey dumped him for Jack and not 18 months after that when she rejected him for Pacey. Like, let's be real.
And also, technically, not that anyone remembers this, she dumped him to spend more time with her craft.
She sure did. She sure did.
And then her craft became writing, LOL.
Yeah. There's still more fight. Clip 20.
Joey, I know what I want. I've always known what I want. Before we destroy whatever chance we might actually have at having a relationship, I'm asking you, please, stop and think about this. Is this really what you want? Is this really the way that you want things to end between us?
This is also Jen erasure. Like, he was with Jen for months. I don't think he's always knew what he wanted when he was sleeping with another girl.
Yeah. Also, Jen threw a spanner in the works in the series premiere. So she is, I mean, I know everybody's siloed, but hello. Mm-hmm. And also, you live in the same hometown. Mm-hmm. And also, you should know better than anybody. This shit never ends between you. Mm-hmm.
But also, you're both 19. Like, you don't have to be this serious about everything yet, just because you've known each other all your lives and, like, have built this up since you were literally children.
Yeah. If anything, that's a recommendation for just letting this fight have you, in the words of the great philosopher Chase, and then see what happens. Because, like, there's just too much. Like, I had big thoughts about destiny and people I'd known for a long time when I was that age. And it's like, you know what? Sometimes that's not it.
No.
Go on OKCupid and find a nice man.
Over to Hell's Kitchen, where the other four surprise party planners are discussing what they just fled. Clip 21.
They do this all the time, right? No big whoop. I mean, it's normal to fight. It's healthy.
I don't know if healthy is the word I would use to describe their relationship. I mean, I'm all for will they and won't they finally get in their shot. But for two people to be that dependent on each other for their life's happiness is just...
incredibly romantic.
Ugh.
No.
But also... like, Pacey should not be the one saying any of that. It should be Jen or Jack, because Pacey and Joey, you know, it was different for them. But that's obviously just to set up Audrey to deliver that line in the barfiest possible way.
Oh, yeah.
They go on clip 22.
Or perhaps structurally unsound?
Yeah, I'll second that.
Wait a second. All of a sudden you're coming out as some sort of non-believer.
Let's not forget who broke him up the first time around.
Jen. Oh, don't look at me. I'm too far messed up in this thing to have an opinion. I am just the roadkill on the Dawson and Joey highway.
That's the healthiest person at the table, honestly.
Yes.
And Jack.
Said without a trace of bitterness.
Yes.
Just like, look, we're all just non-players in this show.
But again, like, bringing up the Jack raking them up, it's like no one has talked about this in literal years on the show, and now it comes up twice in the same episode. Like, okay,
yeah, wow, all right,
hello show Bible. Back at the dorm room, Dawson stews beside Joey's bed while Joey has the dry cries in the bathroom when she finally emerges looking not at all like a tear has been shed based on her face. She faintly asks about his flight. When Dawson gets up and sees her standing in the doorway with her arms crossed, he asks why she's doing this. Clip 23.
We're doing this, Dawson. It's what we do. It's what we always do.
Last night was real. Today was real. It's you, not me, doesn't want to deal with the realities of an adult relationship.
You're right.
That's it. I'm right.
I want the fantasy. I want more than anything for us to be together. Not like this. I'm not screaming at the top of our lungs about things that happened 4 years ago.
But if we can't argue like this and get past it, then...
maybe there's nothing here worth saving. Maybe last night was just...
just what?
Just two old friends making a huge mistake.
No, I'll leave Amy out of this.
Wow. Literally in my notes.
If that's the way you feel, then I should go.
That song is It's Not by Amy Mann. It is such a sad, beautiful song.
It is.
I'm glad she got paid. She should not be implicated in any of this.
No. Yeah, this was her like WB period. I think she had that I hate playing these vampire towns bit.
Yep.
On Buffy. Okay. Well,
as soon as Dawson has slammed the door, Joey and Dawson turn toward each other on either side of it, both put their hands on the knob and then decide against it. And Joey ends up alone in bed, having the dry cries some more and contemplating the snow globe, but
with her shoes on.
With her shoes on, of course.
Jesus.
At least she does not do anything melodramatic, like throw it through the window or in the trash or whatever. I assume so that she can give it back to him at some other poignant moment in the future, as she should, because as I said last week, it's more a gift for him than for her, in my opinion. And that's it. Let's name our episode MVP. Jack had a lot of really good lines. I'm going to give it to Jack. He was very funny in this quite maudlin episode.
I'm going to say James Vanderbeek. Seemed like a fuckable romantic protagonist, finally. I don't think they belong together, but I was on his side, at least.
Least valuable player. I mean, I'm still so sick of Joey. I got to say Joey.
Yeah. Joey.
Such a drag.
Yeah. Huge drag. Next time on Again With This, Jack tries to hit on his prof, Pacey tries to take proper credit at his new job, and Joey tries to disappear into the floorboards when she accidentally sends an email meant for Dawson to the entire undergraduate student body, and they all realize she's not the only shit writer in Dawson's Creek. Speaking of shit, styling decisions of the early aughts. You can see most of those in our visual aids. That's the important screenshots and GIFs that we do for every episode of this podcast. You can find them along with the full archive of the episodes themselves and the Again With This Club at againwiththispodcast.com. I'm the structurally unsound Sarah D. Bunting, and I'm on Blue Sky at Sarah D. Bunting. My co-host is Roadkill on the Again With This Highway, Tara Ariano, and she's on Blue Sky at Tara Ariano. And our producer, David T. Cole, knows no ethical boundaries. Talk to you next time.
I want to be your boy adventure.